The opinions and statements expressed in the following program do not necessarily reflect those of WWDB, its staff, or management.
Isn't it about time for a change?
We're our national leaders.
AmericanWorkersRadio.com. You're listening to American Workers Radio, a national network promoting American-made products with your host, Michael Blihash.
Well, welcome once again to another edition of American Workers Radio, broadcasting here on 860 AM. As you know, we serve southeastern Pennsylvania, the state of New Jersey, and northern Delaware, and I'm really pleased to hear from many people who say they enjoy the broadcast either live from 11 to 12 or anytime on the internet when they're doing their emails, sitting back wanting to just hear some good news and some factual news, some common sense type things. If you live in the area and you would like to have someone tune in on the radio, do that right now. Go to your television, your phone, whatever. However you're doing it, everybody's watching things on television now. You can dial people from TV, and it's unbelievable. It's just unbelievable how much technology has grown. Go to them and ask them to tune into our broadcast here on 860. And I want to say a special thank you to Mark Andel, who is the founder of the Made in America store, Larkin Conley, our national small business advocate, who will be doing an interview today with Bruce Beaton. Also, Rich Logis, the principal of RJL Technology Integration. Our engineer is Henry Chaplinsky, and I'm Michael Blihash. I also want to send out a shout-out thank you to Jason Kilmeyer, who was our guest last week, and people enjoyed all of us discussing the importance of promoting America and American workers. Wow, that's something we're just not hearing enough of from our elected leaders. And as we gather on this Wednesday, January the 19th, I want to thank you for tuning in and, of course, for all of your efforts to spread the word. I was especially pleased this past week when I went to visit someone. They told me how they tune in on the internet, and they went over to their television, and there they had all this stuff come up, and they hit a button, American Workers Radio came right up, and I thought, wow, this is what I have to find out more about. So maybe more people will even enjoy it while they're not watching TV, the whole TV, but the radio plays while they're getting different information on the second side. Well, it's great that we are continuing our goal, buy American-made products which support American workers. You know, I wish more of our national leaders, candidates that are seeking to be senators, congressmen, council people, would all take this message and become a bigger part of what America needs them to be. After years of promoting our goals to our fellow Americans, we can all see that we're fractured as a nation by poor leadership. We're not totally broken. We're just fractured by the poor leadership that we've experienced in the last 35 years as the global industries grew, and I mean really grew, and attracted tens of thousands of the businesses from foreign, you know, countries came over and said, let us do your job for you for much less and you'll make a bigger profit. We watched those businesses exit America. And then we watched America's industries slowly being reduced year after year. Now, America should definitely not be in the position we find ourselves today, where the foreign countries are controlling such a large portion of the supply chain of merchandise now sold in America. Every time you pick up an item, I'm asking all of you to look closely at the label, because that really tells us what's going on. Why America's leaders thought it was okay to allow our employment base here in the United States to be moved abroad year after year should have been questioned by the American people many years ago. I do understand that at one point, big boards in the stock exchange and in New York made the decisions. Those boards are mainly diminished. The foreign countries are controlling so much now, it is unbelievable. We try to buy things, and then they're saying, well, Michael, they're not going to have that as a priority 2 years from now, so we're really bringing in a large portion of the stock. And I say, who's not going to have the people in the foreign countries like to keep new products moving. And I said, well, that's very interesting. So that's a part of the problem that we are suffering from. And nobody in the United States of America even realizes that this has been going on. But at no time should America's national elected leaders have allowed long-term jobs, which are needed for our working age and able-bodied Americans, to be lost to foreign countries without working to ensure that new jobs would be available to replace them and get every type of job here in the United States. If they wanted to send clothing industry over to other countries, well, how about a portion of it here? So we keep that here. And during this pandemic, Mark Andel can tell you he had no supply chain problem whatsoever. Jason told us last week, Jason Kilmeyer, we had no supply problem last 22 months because a lot of the people who were making things in America really stepped up and their inventories went in circulation, and now they're working very hard to replace what they sold over the Christmas holidays because a lot of the supply chain was still sitting there in America's ports. Today, in the process of promoting our campaign theme, Buy American Made Products, Support American Workers, we're really helping also America to move their product lines and to increase the circulation of their products to America's consumers. Getting the product to market is the most important thing. I've been doing a little bit of a study, and I'm finding out that one product on the shelf has a competitive product next to it, and it's maybe 15 cents cheaper for the foreign made. 15 cents cheaper. Most people don't even know the difference. They're looking for the product, whatever's there, they just grab it and they take it home. And the next thing you know, everything is fine. The foreign chain supply just goes wild. So every time you and I support the American-made label, we're really helping the supply chain of American-made products, which is providing the long-term jobs that are needed by Americans and keep our businesses in order and the future of America's youth. That's why I'm really doing all this, because I'm looking out for America's youth. Now, a year ago, the President of the United States wrote a directive, a resolution, whatever you want to call it, stating that all of the departments in the United States should focus on American-made. Well, I'm going to give you a little report today. Much of the products that they usually purchase, they found to be foreign-made. So now we have to reinvent all those industries, and it's not going to just take 1 or 2 or 3 years. We have to reinvent all those industries in order to be able to honor a directive, a resolution by the president or the Senate or the House, whatever. We lost our ship. We lost our future by allowing the people not to speak up and have a word. This should have been handled by the American people and America's leaders elected to go to Washington. With that in mind, I'm going to ask Mark and Rich to speak first, and then we're going to go to Larkin. Rich, tell us everything. What have you been doing, and what's going on in your neck of the woods?
Good morning, Michael. Hi, everyone, and to listeners. And Bruce, welcome. I'm eager to thank you for coming on and taking time with us. And I'll tell you, Michael, I'm a little bit, I said to someone today, you know, I tend to be a little bit of the John Lennon approach when we're talking Lennon-McCartney. There's a Beatles song on Sgt. Pepper called Getting Better. and Paul sings Getting Better All the Time, and John Lennon comes in with his lyric, and he comes in and says, can't get no worse. And I'm trying to, when I talk with my customers, Michael, I talk to businesses of all differing sizes all the time, every day, as my customers. And I'm going to tell you, Michael, that there's a lot of people right now who are anxious, who are hurting, who mark they're more and more inching toward that desperate feeling, that feeling of desperation as a business owner, mostly small business owners, Mark. And what sort of galls me, and this is a full admission on my part, is I'm not entirely sure, Mark, what the solution is. I mean, I don't think anyone has a monopoly on good ideas. Our two political parties tend to have a duopoly on bad ideas, but even that's the case where no one has a monopoly solely on good or bad ideas. So I'm not, Mark, I'm not really entirely sure. What I will say, though, Michael, is a point that, if I may reiterate this point, though I do not look at government as an entity of messianic miracle workers, what government is, though, is they are in positions of leadership. That's true, whether we like the politician or not, whether you like Donald Trump or not, or like Joe Biden or like Barack Obama, they were in positions of leadership, whether you like them or not.
Sure.
And we do not have, we are sorely lacking a head coach, a general, a CEO, so to speak, who is willing to actually lead. Because one of the traits of being a leader, Michael, is to always be honest, even at the risk of losing relationships and money.
Mm-hmm.
That's a non-negotiable trademark of leadership. I mean, Mark, you live that all the time. I mean, Mark, for God's sakes, you had to lay family members off at one time.
Absolutely.
And you felt, I never had to do that. I can only imagine how crappy that felt. I mean, you probably didn't sleep the night before. You knew you had to do it because you care about your people, because a leader cares about his or her people, Michael. But damn it, Mark, you had to do it because it was necessary to lead the organization. You had to do it.
Mm-hmm.
This is what is lacking.
It's do or die. And, that's right.
And if the coach doesn't lead, the team loses. If the general doesn't lead, there are mass casualties. If the CEO doesn't lead, then the company hemorrhages money. It loses market share. Well, in the United States, when political leaders are failing, it's going to trickle down, Michael, to the populace. Talk about politicians not being honest. There's a reason for that. And part of that, when we talk about our populace, you're talking about jobs being shipped overseas, Michael. Unless somebody knows someone, Michael, whose job was shipped overseas. And by the way, shipping jobs overseas is a bipartisan scourge, not solely for it's for both parties. But Michael, unless somebody knows that those jobs went overseas, yeah, maybe they read a story once in a while about it. But then it goes back to, oh, that's terrible, Michael, that these jobs went overseas. What's for dinner?
That's right.
So
unless, you're right, absolutely
Mark,
right.
Unless you know someone it happened to, you know, what's the usual utopian American mentality? Didn't affect me. What's the big deal? Who cares? But the problem with that way of thinking, Michael, is something doesn't affect you until it does. Until it does.
Mm-hmm.
And guess what America's all being affected by right now? Ultra dependency on overseas manufacturing. I mean, Mark, I don't think I got the right to be right. Am I saying anything that's incorrect, Mark?
Not at all. Why not, Rich?
You could disagree. Oh, you could disagree as much as you guys want with me. I'm okay with that. I'm just seeking trying to find some resolution here. Is anything that I'm missing? I mean, do we look at our leaders in the country and in the realm of lawmaking and say, wow, I can't believe how great our leadership is? Do you go to Wawa you know, Henry, our audio engineer, pouring your coffee, and they said, boy, this coffee's really good. What incredible leadership we have in the nation. I don't think anyone's saying that.
Not at all. You know, Rich, this is something I want to bring up because this was cracked me up. You know, this is now political season. People are going to be coming and throwing their hat in the ring for senators and congresspeople and governor of Pennsylvania and all. They all, you know, say, want to contact you and say, this is, you're doing wonderful work for the people and your community and all this rigmarole. And I say, well, how are you going to participate at anything that we do? Well, you know, we're working on the campaign. And I said, well, this is what I see as the major problem. They announced the candidacy now. The primary comes up in May. It's running the clock out. If they're not pulled up to come on to talk stations and or the big programs and talk what they're really interested to do, they're not going to do anything. They're going to run the clock out. Then when they run for election, it's going to be Democratic against Republican. And I really, that is why I feel that in the primary, people, and I'll get to that later today or next week, I feel that people should be able to vote whether they're registered Democrat, Republican, or independent. To give you a perfect example of an excuse, which they would rather never hear from me again. However, I did ask this question. President Biden signed an executive order strengthening American-made and provisions ensuring the future of American-made in America for all workers. He signed this order telling all of the departments in the United States government, all money passed through the government, to look for American-made first. So I did make some inquiries about it. Unfortunately, a lot of the stuff made is foreign at this point. And the story is, the answer is that executive order was signed on January the 25th, 2021. They say, oh, we didn't realize that it would be hard to find this many American-made products. We didn't realize we couldn't find this many American-made products. Jen Psaki and all these people, why can't they find it? Why did they sign this resolution? With the idea that we're going to bring those jobs, we want to highlight those jobs. No, oh, we thought that it would be at least 50%. No, it's 10, 12, and 15% the most available,
Michael,
for government to purchase for schools and all of their institutions, especially when it comes to televisions, computers, and all the components. Yes, Rich.
Just one other point before we get to everyone else, okay, that all of the term free trade, and I know this is going to get Larkin's adrenaline flowing, what I'm about to say.
That's good.
This term free trade is all that is just more, it's just more punditry talk. It is.
Well,
because you ask people out there who talk about free trade, first of all, the politicians already have their canned answer for free trade. They're already, oh, it's a global economy.
Right. You know, oh. Free
market. But between the lines there, Mark and Larkin, between the lines is basically, well, if American jobs get shipped overseas, you know, so be it.
Well, you know
that's
what?
Just the way to
Rich, that's.
Oh, well, that's how it is. That's global economy. That's free trade. And I would. And that answer there has become so unacceptable, but it will continue, Michael. It will continue to be acceptable for as long as people accept it. So the only slight solution that I can offer in this conversation is that instead of lamenting with never-ending jeremiads about failed leadership and all of that, we know that's true. I don't want to be the guy who just tells everybody what they know already. What do we do about it? Mark, I can't make someone look in the mirror, an American, a voter, a consumer. I can't force him to look in the mirror and ask himself, is this really the kind of country you want to be in? So I am all ears, Michael, for ideas on how to get more people looking in that mirror. Now, I'm going to probably take the approach, the way I'm going to wind up doing it, is I'm going to go to voters who are both registered Republicans and registered Democrats, because those are our two parties, and I'm going to say to them, maybe we need to make these elected leaders, the way that they'll more listen to us is if they're afraid that we might oust them out of office.
Well, Rich, that's very well said.
Mark, if a customer came to you and was telling you, Mark, I got to start shopping around for whatever reason, cost, he doesn't like you, yeah, whatever. Are you going to sit there, Mark, and say, screw him, go buy for me? No, you're going to work harder
right
to retain that business. You're going to work double time to retain that business. Well, guess what, Mark? If you were going to get that guy's business no matter what, now I know you as a man of integrity would still work for it, but guess what? Human nature says that most people who would get that business, they wouldn't care what that guy said. Oh, you know what, you have a problem with it? Screw you. Mm-hmm. Does everyone realize that that's the way that most politicians look at voters today, Michael?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, you don't like it, Michael? Where else are you going to go? Who else are you going to vote for? Oh, you don't like it, Larkin? Who else are you going to go? Henry, you don't like it? Bruce? Mark? People listening up, you don't like it? Where else are you going to go? See, the only way, Michael, is by force. And I don't mean violence. Okay, everyone ever going to say, oh, my God, censor Rich. Mute him. Mute him back at the studio. No. I don't mean violence. Only way, Mark, is you got to force him to listen. And what's the best way to force elected leaders to listen? To make them afraid that you're going to oust them.
Right. And give them no money until they give you proper answers.
And Michael, I don't want to take a utopian approach. I understand most people don't have millions and millions and millions of dollars to send into politics, into elections, the campaigns to get attention. I understand that. But damn it, you want to know something? Don't underestimate Michael. I tell people all the time in Florida, don't you dare underestimate the power of that vote you have. Because even though most people ain't got millions of dollars, Michael, guess what? A billionaire, Republican or Democrat, who sends money into politics to get what he or she wants, that person still only has one vote.
Rich, there's one big thing which I want to just add here. I'm going to go to Mark before we go to Bruce and to Larkin. I want to tell you this. The media does not want to get into this seesaw situation because political ads bring sizable amounts of money into their pockets during a campaign. If they started to question individual candidates and one individual A gave a better response than individual B, they would not be very happy. People could turn and say, where did you hear that? Where did you? I heard it on American Workers Radio. I heard it on 1210. I heard it here. This is why they stay away from it. After the election season, they pretend like there was no election going on. They just go out of the situation totally. So big news, the major media market does not want to cover this kind of stuff. However, if the candidates didn't have the big money to spend on the big ads, the stations would be more realistic. Right now, they don't want to take a chance on angering some candidate who could be the final candidate and want all the ads in the future. It's a very ugly situation. The sad part of it is all that we've tried to do over the years is influence our friends, families, our listeners, our fellow Americans, to start looking out for our fellow Americans as though we were family, not just people, people in America, family. You want to take care of your family. I want people to have job skills. I want my children, my grandchildren, I want their children and their grandchildren to have an opportunity, not to be told, oh, we can't, we're having a problem. You know, that company was sold 25 years ago to a foreign country. They just control the brand name. They do not control the product, the board, or anything else. You're worrying about something that doesn't exist anymore. Mark, can we hear from you?
Yeah, how you doing, Mike and Rich? I think we got Bruce on and Larkin. You know, first, go Bills. I got to bring it up.
And I understand you got quite a bit
Mark,
of snow up
Mark,
there.
I got so riled up. I'm you know what? For a little while last week, last point, I promise, for a little while last week, you know, all was right again in the world. The Bills won and the Cowboys lost in their usual spectacular fashion. All was right. Mark, and I know you're happy about that quote, all was right in the world for a little while.
You know,
Bills won, Bills Patriots lost, Cowboys lost. I'm done, Mark. Good, go Bills.
I want to pay a kudo to your football team in Buffalo. That playoff game that they played was almost perfect.
Yeah, you know, we watch a lot of Bills. You know, we have a lot of fun. But, yeah, you know, that game was just complete. Four quarters, seven drives, seven touchdowns, no punts, no field goals. It's just Josh Allen has that can-do spirit to that blue-collar spirit, and that team does. And I watch Pittsburgh, and I like Big Ben. And my ops manager here, John Omler, is from Pittsburgh. So, you know, the Bills pulled it together. If they can do that again, I think they can beat anybody. But, you know, it was just a great game and it picks up people. So I bring that up because, that team, everybody did their part. Everybody did their job that game, that day. And that's kind of what we need to happen a lot in business and in the country. Also, Mike, big snow. You know, we got a foot to 2 foot Monday. That's what we get. We get feet, not inches up here. Big for our business because General Welding is a Western York's truck equipment center, and we're in the snow and ice control with the Boss snow plow and whatnot, and I still plow. So been a long couple days, but the business needed it. We've had no plowable snow really November, December, which in my last 20, 30 years, you know, we haven't had that. And that's just another hit during these tough disaster pandemic times with no snow for a snow business. If you're skiers up here, if you're restaurants, with the snowmobile trails, we're all thankful for the snow. So there's a product, the only product that got delivered finally. So, Mike, big Bills, big snow. But, you know, talking about what Rich, you text some stuff on supply chain issues, the shipping ports, the corruption. I hope somebody or seen that, you know, they're robbing the rail cars with the shipping containers double-stacked, opening the doors, throwing it out like the old days. And they're not using horses to pick it up, probably quads. But there's so much going on in the supply chain problem. Today I watched a big thing, you know, with Canada, with the pandemic and the vaccine mandate, the truck drivers that drive alone in their cab are not being allowed over to Canada. And, you know, Canada is our biggest trade partner. You know, I forget the numbers. It's up there on the trade. It's not China. It's actually Canada. And it's a shame because the vaccine mandate was stopped. And for big companies by me, Moog was happy. They had 670 people, you know, probably going to lose their jobs January 6th and then after. So I don't know, with Canada and the truck driver shortage, Rich, you talked about the corruption in the ports, which we want to touch on. We've got a pandemic. I haven't lived through the Great Depression, but we've got major things, rapid inflation, product shortage, worker shortage. As much as we got to pivot, adjust, and face the brutal facts, these are tough, tough times. Rich, you hit on it this morning. I'm in business. I live and breathe it. General Welding, Made in America stores. An answer to the shipping port problems, all the shipping containers. Again, they're being robbed on trains. Again, if you made the products here, a lot of these things go away, so we can never take our eye off our concept and core value of making things in America and answering that problem first, because that is the problem that needs to be answered, and that takes care of a lot of logistic problems. But we've got some serious issues. The wet China paper bag called the government here, it's going to fall out. The bottom's falling out. They're not going to be able to hide it. You know, we've got a lot. My military work's still on pause for 2 years. You know, the oil mining work's not here for us. We're living on every other thing that we've ever thought of at General Welding, and I never quit. You know, our motto is you dream it, we build it. But we've got, you know, you've got to bring cash flow, and Larkin, you know, you've got to create sales. When steel is three times what it was before the pandemic, and you know what? It's not going down. I just met with some big people. It's $1.50 a pound for us. So the lawn rollers we build, the trailers we manufacture, hard to sell to a residential owner. So that category for residential people is pretty well knocked out of our sales. We may be able to, we're focusing more on repair in rental to the residential owner. So we got to focus. We lose that complete leg. We got to focus on the commercial and the industrial people. Hopefully, they can afford this very inflated product, 2 to 3 times a trailer that we manufacture, a lawn product that we manufacture, a fire ring for our stores, 2 to 3 times. And if it's stainless steel, it's 4 times more than it was a year and a half ago. These are numbers you can't hide behind. You can't hide from. You talk about lack of leadership. There's no leadership in Washington.
You know, Mark, just...
And it's sad, Mike, because these are major problems. This ain't a little tough, like Rich is talking, for business. A little tough.
You know, Mark, I want to say this to you. I had, in speaking with the political people, I say to them, what do you have to say about the 77,000 businesses leaving America in the last 30 years and moving abroad? They say... that something should have been addressed 30 years ago. I said, okay, it was a 30-year mistake. Sometime you have 30-year mistakes. You want to run for Congress. You're running for re-election. How about you put that on your list of things to do to urge businesses to blossom here in the United States, no matter what they're making? And they say, well, it's something that's going to have to be discussed. If it was discussed and mandated 30 years ago, we would never be in the situation we are today, no matter if it's a free open economy or whatever. Mandated tariffs, whatever, should have been in place 30 years ago at their request.
A few things. I want to bring up, though, a good thing that the SBA and our government's part of was the PPP program. Number one, number two, because without them, most businesses wouldn't have survived. And then the EIDL programs out there, and thank God, Larkin, with the SBA, I had some great talks with Paul Hoffman up here, Frank Sorrentino, Larkin, you know him. The EIDL program, it was shut off 12/31. Mike, you had brought it up too. Some of these programs, we haven't got that yet, but without these helpful programs, so there's some good things that are out there, but these businesses are in disaster mode, survival mode. They need the cash flow. When your lines of business, if it's industrial, if it's military, if it's oil mining, whatever leg, it was a disaster if it was wiped out. Because a lot of them people aren't even back to their jobs yet at Northrop Grumman. A lot of the people I deal with, it's 23 months now they've been at home. A lot of them jobs you can't do from home, especially in my business. You need the blue-collar worker. You need the skilled trade workers on my site assembling. So there's so many problems when they say, oh, you can work from home. Not like Moog that manufactures servo valves right in my backyard, top 100 company of the world. They needed the 630 assemblers that were going to not show up. So there's so many things going on, and I'd like your opinions on them all, but we're in tough shape as a country, and they can't hide it much longer on the news.
No, you're right. And, you know, I just want to add one thing. After all America went through during this last 22 months, my question is still the same. It's 22 months. In 2 months, it'll be 2 years. We'll be starting on the third year. After the 15th
of March. And they're sending out free test kits.
That's a big to-do.
Beautiful.
My question is, where did all this start? Why has nothing been acknowledged? It's to date. Nothing's been acknowledged. I'd like to know, is there any reparations that could come to all the trillions of dollars that America had to put out? Not only America, but all the countries of the world. Nothing's been done.
Our health and economy, Mike, have to be balanced. It has
absolutely
to be balanced.
Who's going to repay all the money the United States lost, as well as the well-being of American workers, their families, their children? There has to be a solution, not just continue business as usual. And there's real knowledge. Everybody keeps saying, well, we think it was Wuhan. We think it was a bat. We think it was an elephant. We think it was a horse. No, we should know in 2 years, wear a mask, get a vaccine. How about where it started? Make sure it never comes again. And by the way, these viruses are going to be around for years, just like the flu.
Triple vaxxed that are sick and sicker than they've ever been. I've got close friends. It's gets everybody, you get through it. So there's a lot we're dealing with. But, again, we've got to balance it out. We've got to get going forward.
That's right.
Once you shut this big machine off, it's hard to turn back on. We found that out.
That's exactly what I was just about to. You must have read my mind. Once you turn down this country, it's going to be very hard to come back. They're talking about the Olympics. That's in February. China decided a few days ago that because of ongoing strains of the virus now moving, they're not going to have any audience. I don't know if that was a fact, or I heard that on one of the radio stations, a quality radio station. And they said that no audience, no tickets will be sold. The athletes will be in the arenas and just do their thing and be seen on television. And that's going to be the end of that. Who's going to make reparations to our people? We lost thousands and big thousands of people. Who's going to make reparations for the businesses that lost their stability? They had to take all those loans. Yes, you're right, from SBA and all. But how about the reason they had to take the loan? The reason they're going to have to pay those loans back, their loans. They're not for free.
EIDL
is a loan. You take the loan, it's got to be paid back in a 30-year period. That's where the problem is. Mark, let's turn to Mark and to Larkin and Bruce. Larkin, tell us everything.
Well, that won't take very long. That seems to be my canned answer. Good morning, Michael, Rich, Mark, Henry, and all of our listeners. I want to do a little house cleaning, and I do not want to start another conversation, because it's very hard for somebody to ask me a question if I don't have an answer. I have to go find it. I think your question last week, Michael, was who started January 6th? Why can't they find out who it is? Well, I think everybody knows who started it. And how it developed.
Who was it?
The original license given on the mall for Trump to appear and talk to the people that she organized was Amy Kremer. And I didn't take the time to go find out who Amy Kremer is. She's a longtime Republican, a big-time organizer, fundraiser, and I think she's in charge of the crazy women for Republicans. I'm not sure. And the people who organized the march from that appearance, from that site where they were permitted to meet up to the Capitol, obviously were the Proud Boys and the Oath Keepers. I wanted to break in and say something to you. There's no mystery here. There's nobody walking around trying to figure. They've charged 25 people, and by the time this gets over, there will be a lot more people charged in that activity. And I've got other feelings about that too, but we can save that for another time, because I have a good friend of mine and of this radio shows and of all of the participants, my friend Bruce Bassett Powell, on the phone. Bruce, and I think we all know Bruce's background, but just very quickly, you'll be able to tell from his accent that he wasn't born and raised in Alabama. He's come to America. He's an entrepreneur. He started a furniture business for 14 years, import-export, mostly import. Bruce is, to me, understands the freight forwarding business and the supply chain, all of it's related. He talks probably once a week to the Far East, and I think he's had some conversations, and I think has a better grip on the supply chain problem and how either close or far away we are from solving this problem. And in its simplest form, the supply chain is, you know, the activities required by an organization to deliver goods and services to the customer. So a supply chain is wigwam socks from Wisconsin over to Mark's store. That's a supply chain. The supply chain goes back to the sheep where they shave the wool to make the saw. You know, that is that supply chain. We unfortunately have a huge percentage of our supply chain in this country comes from the Far East. And it's mostly imported. So with that, I'm going to ask Bruce. Good morning, Bruce.
Good morning.
I'm going to ask you for
We already said good morning to Henry.
I think Bruce has a Florida accent.
It's a Texas accent now.
A Texas accent, yeah. Bruce, knowing that the supply chain starts with the origination of the product and concludes with the consumer, or delivering it to the consumer, could you address the Asian portion of this as that comes forward in the supply chain, what's happening over there?
Well, and I know I'm not going to be a popular man as somebody who's imported everything he sold in actually 17 years of business. So, that's what I did. I think Mark will agree with me that even he has various things that have to be to come from imported products in the products that he makes, in the way of screws and fasteners and things like that.
Yes.
That must happen. So when it comes to the supply chain, it's, again, not only people who import products to resell, but it's people who import components of their of the product that they're making in America. That's where the supply chain really hurts. Right now, the situation is that, for all of you who don't know, February the 1st is the start of the Chinese New Year. And when I had my business, it was a scramble to get product before the Chinese New Year started, because they go away they all leave home for 3 weeks and don't come back again. They don't work very well when they arrive back. So this is people who now have been scrambling to get their products, and everything else has been tossed out, so that when Chinese New Year is over with, is when everything will start back again, and it'll take a while for it to get up steam again. So just be aware of that. That's going to be an issue. I mean, many of you go to your grocery stores and see empty shelves. That's going to be exacerbated, not only because some of it's imported, but also because of the transportation system in this country. It's been absolutely hobbled by the pandemic, and goods are not getting to supermarkets because there's often no drivers to drive them. And goods are not coming from the farms and fish markets because, again, there's nobody to drive often, and that's the case. Or the number of people in the farm or on the coast there are not enough of them to process the products. It's just, it's not going to get any better anytime soon. And I'm sure Mark will agree with me on that.
So I wanted to ask you, in addition to the original question, I really think that blaming transportation issue from the longshoreman to the consumer on the pandemic is pretty weak. I mean, honestly?
Weak for who?
I mean, Well, I mean, we lost drivers to the pandemic. I'm not sure that that's the reason. You're saying,
well, when you know, again, when any crisis hits, as we were, Rich and Mark have been talking about, is leadership that's part of the problem, you know, nobody came to the fore as this supply chain problem expanded. So you're half right there, Mark Larkin. But I really do think that, you know, we ought to distinguish in this country the difference between imported goods and the issue of foreign-owned companies. It's two completely different things. I don't think we're ever going to stop importing things just because we can't. But foreign-owned companies, I think, are more of a, especially ones which include private equity takeovers, is much more damaging to this country than anything else.
I agree.
To the business.
Bruce, let me ask you this. In your 17 years of business, importing things, did you see that there could have been and should have been more businesses trying to compete with you for their, you know, to bring their products to you, American made? Did you have a lot of that, or were you strictly featuring a product that's only made in foreign countries?
Well, we labored hard to find a way of actually making our products here in the United States. We even got involved with some Amish people up in Lancaster, Pennsylvania, to do it, having components. I mean, we don't grow teak in this country or anywhere near this country. It has to be imported. And bringing in teak logs is not something that furniture manufacturers want to do. They want to bring in the arms and the legs and all that kind of thing and
pre-made
put it together when it's here. Yeah.
Right.
So we did the cost of making wooden furniture from scratch here in the U.S. was so enormous back in the 1980s and 1990s that it didn't even make sense to think about it. But we did think about it. But we found the cost to be prohibitive.
Bruce, I want to ask you a question. At any point in your business, did you take notice that national leaders were saying anything about, we got to keep these industries in America, we have to expand our outreach to get more products made in the United States? Did you hear anything like that from our leaders in Washington?
Well, I think along with everything else, there was the political messages of that kind were made, but not very strongly. Mm-hmm. You know, I didn't ever get any pressure from any quarter that I should make the products here in the United States.
Or give you at least some incentive to make the product here to support our workers.
No, I never came across anything like that.
That's where I have my differences with a lot of these national leaders running for re-election, especially the Congress people. I ask, well, how did you support American workers within your congressional district? And they look at me in amazement, like, well, how am I supposed to do that? Well, you are supposed to go to Washington and say, we are losing our shirt by getting all this stuff imported instead of making it here in America. We have seen our poverty level go from one number to 75% higher than it was 30 years ago. Yet no one's talking about that. Poverty has risen, and those people could and should be trained for jobs, but no one in the hierarchy. Now, the people in the States, Bruce, tell us, well, that's really because we're just a state. that's really an initiative that should come from Washington. Yet Washington does nothing.
Right.
It's absolutely a circus. It's really a circus. And nobody wants to say much about it. But I think this year has to be different. Yes, Larkin.
In my time,
I did employ over 100 people. I don't know what they would have done if they hadn't had a job like that. But it was, importing and distributing still requires people.
Absolutely. Well, that's where the 50-50 balance, if there was a 50-50 balance of everything, we'd be a lot better off. But there was never even any discussion. When I talked to this great congressman, I mentioned 50-50 balance. He said, well, that's who's going to oversee that? I thought to myself, well, what are you there for? Just spending time looking for ways to tax us and give, talk about voter issues and things like that. How about talking about bread and butter issues that affect our living people today and our future generations? Yes, Larkin, sorry.
That's okay. I just wanted to get back to Bruce. We heard the great segue from Mark, which I very much appreciated, about the supply chain. And what you've said in essence is, if Mark thinks the supply chain is bad now and is going to get worse, you're only amplifying that and saying it's going to get a lot worse.
Yeah. As I say, once the Chinese New Year's over, everybody's going to be scrambling again. I know at least one importer that is planning everything to happen after Chinese New Year. The next thing that happens is Ramadan for the Southeast Asian countries that are Muslim. It's one thing after another, which in normal times you dealt with because you could plan for it, but you can't plan for what's going on right now.
Well, Bruce, you brought a very good message today, because I don't hear from anybody. I spoke to lumber people. I spoke to iron ore people. I spoke to all these types of businesses that depend on a large portion of their stuff to come from America. Most recently, what discourages a lot of American people, and it may have to come to a head during this election, is our Keystone Pipeline should not have been canceled. We should not be on our knees begging people in foreign countries to ship more oil over to the United States of America. We should be looking for ways to be self-sufficient. And we're not.
I wanted to end on a high note. And that is that yesterday I listened to the governors of New Mexico, New Jersey, and Virginia deliver their addresses to the state, their annual addresses to the state. Two were reelected. One that was very interesting was the governor of Virginia, who I think gave just a stellar address. But he offered to American retailers and people on this end of the supply chain, if you're having a problem getting your ships into port, if you're having trouble getting your containers off the ship, if you're having trouble with not having enough drivers to get the containers delivered, come to Norfolk, because we're ready to take care of it for you.
There you go.
Now that's
what I like.
That's what a governor does.
That's correct, Larkin. That's leadership. That is leadership.
Thanks, indeed.
That leadership. Come to Norfolk. We'll take care of your container. And by the way, as I'm on I-95 at least three times a week, there's no less or no more half containers or full containers going up and down the road. The backlog is just a mystery to me. But the containers, and they're still, in Florida and
they pushed the containers offshore. So that when I flew in from New York the other day, New York City, I said to my wife, well, all the containers are gone. They must have them all on shore. Well, no, no. They told the ships, quit bobbing around in the ocean 1 mile offshore. Go out 15 miles.
Right.
So you don't get a chance to see
because
them.
They're
out there.
That's right. It's being discussed in the media. That's why they told them to get off, get out of Dodge, get out of view. This is a disgrace that has to be addressed. You know, I got two visitors, by the way, in the radio studio with me here. I have my granddaughter, Gabriella, and my grandson, Andrew. And that's why this show is so focused on our future generations. One is 5 and a half, the other is 3 and a half. And I want them not to be beggars, but I want them to be chiefs. And that's what I want for every person in the United States of America, that they have the choice to make their destiny a reality. And if 50-50 balance, I'm all for it. Let the world, the global economy exist and flourish. How about that we start looking out for our well-being, our children's well-being, and our grandchildren's well-being, and then their children's well-being. America cannot be a country where we saw 77,000 businesses leave, and America's national leader said, I'm sorry, this is a free and open economy. Isn't that a wonderful response? We can't do anything about it. We're selling our companies off to foreign. Well, that's what they wanted to do. The people were retiring, so they bought up the companies, and now they're located elsewhere. They do have an office in New York, a closet that they pay, you know, to have a New York address. How about us starting to pay more attention to that? Next week, I want to hit the voter issues. There's a lot of things that I'm concerned about this, and we're going to talk about it because all this time wasted in Washington, they should be putting more of their time getting people to jobs, not worrying about all this nonsense with this mandating this and that about voting. We are all citizens. We have the opportunity to vote. I want to know who's stopping anybody to vote. Anyways, ladies and gentlemen, as you can hear, it's that time to say goodbye for today. I first of all would want to ask that you check out the debt clock. It's located right there on the front page of American Workers Radio. You will see that what we're talking about is listed and documented by the United States government. It tells us how many people were working 20 years ago and how many people are working now. And by the way, it's a lot less people working now than it was 20 years ago, and our population has gone up by 30 million. Well, ladies and gentlemen, thanks for tuning in. Kindly spread the word. Henry is going to have the rebroadcast up, and I want to once again say a special thank you for Gabriella, my granddaughter, and Andrew Rott, my grandson, for being here with us today. They got the headsets on, and the next time they come, I'm going to have them on the air. God bless you. God bless America. God bless American workers.
Have a great week, guys. Bruce, thanks for being part of our show. Appreciate your feedback.
Bye,
America. We can't lose faith. We've got that candy spirit, guys.
Knocking.